So, yeah, we are now starting Revelation chapter 8. And for the previous scene was of the throne room and the temple scene that is in heaven. There was the throne and had God sitting on the throne, the Lamb, had the four living creatures, 24 elders, the myriads of angels, and all living creatures. It was a scene of worship. They were praising God, they were praising the Lamb continuously. And so this scroll was given to the Lamb, as because the Lamb was the one who was worthy to open the scroll, to remove the seals and to open the scroll. And so far, we have seen six of the seals of the scrolls opened. The fifth seal asked the question, how long until justice is served? And the sixth seal asked the question, who can stand the day of the Lord? And Revelation chapter 7, instead of the seventh seal being opened, there was a kind of this interlude scene that appeared. And this scene answers the question, who can stand? The seals reveal the beginning of the proclamation of the gospel and the decision or the judgment that hears of the gospel must make in response. And Revelation chapter 7 showed that those who accept the gospel have nothing to fear. On the other hand, seal number 6 showed that those who reject the gospel eventually have everything to fear. And we noted that the events of the seals are not time-bound. They are things that happen throughout the course of history. Every generation hears the message. Every generation must make a choice as to whether to accept or reject the gospel. And so, the audience of this drama, this theater that is unfolding before their eyes in this book of Revelation, with this interlude now, they are anticipating the opening of the seventh seal. And with the opening of the unsealing of the seventh seal, all the seals are opened and one would expect the scroll to be opened to reveal its contents. And the audience probably assumes that the seventh seal completes the judgment that began with the opening of the sixth seal. And with that, let's read the first six verses of chapter 8. When the Lamb opened the seventh seal, there was silence in heaven for about half an hour. Then I saw the seven angels who stand before God, and seven trumpets were given to them. And another angel came and stood at the altar with a golden censer, and he was given much incense to offer with the prayers of all the saints on the golden altar before the throne. And the smoke of the incense with the prayers of the saints rose before God from the hand of the angel. Then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it on the earth, and there were peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake. Now the seven angels who had the seven trumpets prepared to blow them. Another surprise is experienced by the audience. The sixth seal began a judgment, the cataclysm on the earth. And the audience is expecting the seventh seal to complete that judgment. something to complete.
Destroyed.
But at the sixth one, wasn't it hell?
No, it was chapter 7, that's the interlude, that where God told the angels to hold the winds.
Wait.
So this anticipation is building that something is going to happen. Something has to happen. You know, the cries of the saints saying, you know, how long until God brings judgment on the earth? So the seventh seal is opened, and instead of
chaos and cataclysm,
there is silence. There's silence, and then there are trumpets. Remember, we are this is a temple scene. And so this appears to be some kind of ritual that goes on at the temple.
So this is still yet to come. This is pretty much Revelation.
How do you answer that? Yes and no.
Well,
if it's in the book of Revelation, it's foreseen that this is going to happen. This is...
Well, that's the language of Revelation is such that much of it is not necessarily bound to any sort of time.
Right. But that would be, to
us,
the end
of time. It's not necessarily a literal, this is going to happen in the future.
It may.
Some of it, but there's a lot of symbolic theatrical language.
For example, in the early part of Revelation, it talks about the coming of Jesus. And the verb tense is used are in the present tense. So it's not talking about necessarily a future coming of Jesus, but that Jesus is already here.
So this could be part of it.
So sometimes it means... Sometimes it doesn't necessarily mean a specific future. Sometimes it means what's going on around you all the time.
Sometimes
there are references to specific future events, but that's not necessarily what...
But this is a reference to a future event. I mean, I'm interpreting it that way. I'm trying to figure out, because I'm interpreting this as a future event, not something that's already happened.
Well, what you're asking is a valid question.
Because this is, you know, a book of
Revelation. Well, it's a valid question, but for the audience that is hearing this, and picturing it in their minds, they don't yet know if it's present, past, present, or future.
So
they're listening to a drama, a sort of an allegory that's playing out before them, and there will be references to future events, but that's not necessarily the primarily what they're looking at right now.
What you're asking, Justin, is in Christianity there is a lot of, you can hear always on the radio, about how Revelation is talking about the future, and that's what you're coming from, which is very valid. Within the Seventh Adventist Church, they have very much defined what Revelation is speaking to at the end of time. What we're doing in this study doesn't disallow or doesn't distract from that, but what we're trying to do is, rather than sitting today, we're trying to sit in Asia Minor in its day, when John was sitting on Patmos and wrote this to the Asian Minors. What did the Asian Minors actually hear? And what's interesting,
what did it mean to them?
Yeah, Revelation was not a closed book, so it did have meaning to the Asian Minors in their day. And what he's presented it as, which is kind of interesting, is in their day they didn't have TV, they didn't have theater like we are familiar with Shakespeare, but they did have, they call it theater?
It was theater, it was Greek theater.
They did have theater, Greek theater. And Revelation is a theatric presentation that can be presented theatrically in their culture in one city.
Right.
What did they hear?
So the whole book of Revelation was read
in one sitting.
In one sitting.
It would take about 2.5 hours.
Like a Shakespeare play.
Yeah.
Like a Shakespeare play.
And what they're seeing is these things could have been saying a prediction of the future for them, but things that could have already happened to
us. Or were happening at that very time.
Presented in like Greek mythology style theater.
And the seven seals so far have been portrayed as happening at currently at their time in the temple in heaven.
And then sometimes it's presented as something that's happening all the time, not...
So we're pretty much reading the screenplay that's already happened.
We're in a screenplay, well, but some of it is not necessarily something that happened at a specific point in time or will happen at a specific point.
We're reading the script from 2,000 years ago.
We're looking at what God is doing. What God was doing then and is doing now and continues to do. And this is kind of portraying God's point of view, what he is doing in each one of us, in them.
See, every generation of Christians, every generation in the church, when you think about it, is the first generation. Every generation in the church goes through the same experiences that every previous generation did. Now, the details may differ, but the decisions that have to be made, the oppression that they may experience from those outside the church, those are all the same. And Revelation is speaking to those issues. The Revelation is about the gospel of Jesus. Gospel about Jesus. Gospel that was proclaimed by Jesus. And the decision or the judgment that every person has to make in regards to that. And the results and the consequences of those decisions. So as I said, the seven seals, as they are being opened, it's something that is ongoing throughout Christian history. And now the seventh seal is opened and there is silence and trumpets are given. So it appears to be some kind of temple ritual that is about to begin.
Where the audience listening is expecting chaos and calamity, and the seventh seal is open, there's silence and trumpets.
Yeah. And I'm interpreting silence and trumpets to mean something big has been happened, this is trying to focus their attention and then of silence, because that's usually what happens when there's silence. Mm-hmm. Everything happens. And then all of a sudden there's trumpets, which usually trumpets mean there's something
And as part of this ritual involves taking some fire and throwing it down to the earth.
Yeah, I lost it there.
And the description associated with it describes a cataclysm that is similar or appears to resume what is found in the sixth seal.
But the fire, Okay. They had silence. Then there was trumpets.
They were just given trumpets. They hadn't been blown yet.
Given trumpets. And an angel.
Oh.
Angel takes a censer and fills it with fire from the altar and throws
with
it.
With much incense. Incense. Is it incense mercy?
No.
Oh, come on.
Angel came to the altar of incense where there was smoke and incense rising.
He was given much incense.
Incense is like a smell.
He was given incense to offer, but in verse 5, the angel takes the censer and fills it with fire.
You're right. Okay, that's where I was going to. So he was given incense. What does incense portray in their culture?
Prayer.
So he was given a lot of prayers. Yeah, that's right. And he...
Much incense to offer with the prayers.
All the saints of Golden are before the throne. And the smoke of the incense, which is the actual acting of the prayers.
Yeah,
with the prayers of the saints, rose before God.
From the hand of the angel.
And then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire. What does that mean?
Yeah, it looks like... a container that the incense goes.
Fire judgment?
Probably.
He took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar. That kind of sounds like...
So is that the answering of their prayers?
Threw it on the earth.
Could be.
Like he got angry with us?
Kind of what it sounds like.
It sounds like that angel was...
empty out all the prayers and incense and fill it with fire.
What angel was this?
I don't know.
Another angel.
Well,
just another angel.
What is he doing here?
Didn't some of the angels... aren't they...
Well, some of them are bad, but I don't think
this is in heaven. This is in heaven. This is in the temple.
This is in the backyard, so why is he throwing the fire on the earth?
Well, what we've been going through for 6 chapters now is there was a lot of saints that were dead underneath an altar, and their prayers had been ascending to God. Says, God, when are you going to vindicate all this bad stuff that happened to me? And so their prayers have been going to heaven.
People are praying?
Yeah.
So
this is just a
very adamant belief right now.
No, this isn't a doctrine. This is just a fiat.
And I know I'm joking.
And so they've been asking, when's judgment? When's this going to come in?
Well,
so
they didn't say they were dead saints. They were saints who have been martyred.
In other words, representing persecution.
Representing oppression and persecution. Not
so
necessarily
dead.
Yeah,
martyrs were the ones that had been persecuted and died for the cause. I think that's what a martyr was.
This is
you can be a martyr without...
This is theatrics.
I think you can be a martyr without actually dying.
And so the answer to these prayers of the incense, the answer was...
When we discussed those prayers, we noted that it was not a prayer for vindication of their own righteousness, but vindication of God's righteousness.
Maybe that when it goes back to...
Because what is happening to them reflects poorly upon God.
So now they're getting an answer, and the answer is to fill the censer up with fire, which they're saying, whoa, here comes judgment. Because the answer to their prayer was fire.
Oh, here we go.
Wow.
Martyr. Death is...
Well, back in Ephesians, it says we were dead in our sin.
Martyr. One who voluntarily suffers death as a penalty for refusing to renounce.
Maybe they were dead because they were without Christ. They were dead because they were without Christ. Is that what you mean?
No. These were saints who have been martyred.
Yeah,
saints that have been martyred. Jerry was going right. I get confused.
Well, yeah. We're trying not to get too literal. We're trying to sit in a theatrical production, which doesn't have to reflect reality. It reflects emotions and concepts rather than...
It's kind of an allegory, like...
But it's not an allegory.
Yeah, no,
it's not
that's
an allegory,
that
but... It's
a story.
It's a story that...
Okay.
Useful...
the great big bad wolf cuffs and puffs and blows the house down. Well, can a wolf, can any animal blow hard enough to blow a house down? No. So there's a concept there. And that's what this is doing. It's a concept.
We don't have to say that there's actually someone blowing.
Now, if Jerry sneezed, it might be hard enough.
But it didn't say the wolf sneezed. So if the saints are dead or not, the concept is God's character was smudged, and they want to have God's character vindicated.
Right.
If they're dead or alive, it's technically immaterial.
It's immaterial, and those saints represent every Christian, not just those that have been literally martyred, but every Christian who has lived throughout the ages.
So Christianity's prayers.
God's people are saying, God, when are you going to finish this and vindicate your name?
Kind of like today.
And
still
yeah. So this doesn't have to just mean 1st century or 12th century Christians who were beheaded or whatever.
I kind of get it now. See, they're thinking the same way we are thinking. You said it. And just like it authenticated, we want it today to end, and they want it then to end.
And they're saying, when are you going to vindicate yourself and finish this? And here the smoke of the incense of all those prayers are going up, and the angel takes the censer and fills it with fire and throws it on the earth, and what is going on?
So have you ever asked God, when is this, you know, I've had so many bad things happen, when is it going to end? Have you ever asked God that? Okay. This is the same question, the same play. And the answer that God gives you is an incense, which is a vial full of fire. And you say, whoa.
A censer full.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. So.
Way to analyze
it. Well, what's interesting is the way the literary structure of all this is that the seven seals kind of merges into the seven trumpets. There's no distinct boundary because the way it's written, it's as if the seventh seal is now the seven trumpets. All of it.
But you have told all along that the seals are not the message. The seals is just the seal. Are we actually going to start looking at the scroll down?
No, because suspense is going to build because the contents of the scroll are not revealed.
Even yet.
But it's kind of suspected that the book of life, the people written in it, is within the scroll.
Right. There's already been some foreshadowing and some evidence to indicate that the contents of the scroll are the names of the redeemed.
So now all the seals have been removed.
There's
nothing preventing the scroll from unwinding.
But it appears that there's going to be a zooming into and expanding of the seventh seal.
The seventh seal is going to take a long time to kind of open slowly and...
Yeah.
Well, right now we're getting a lot of fanfare.
But the seventh seal doesn't just fall off, it opens slowly, and there's a bunch of events that happen when the seventh seal opens.
It's when the guy stands up to introduce the preacher, and his introduction is longer than the sermon.
Something like that, yeah. So a little background may help in our understanding of what is happening in these verses. This is from the devotional book, The Gospel from Patmos by John Pauline. Shortly after the rooster crowed, this is the Hebrew and Jewish temple ritual that happens every day. Shortly after the rooster crowed, this is in the morning, the officer of the day conducted the casting of lots to determine those who would do the various duties of the daily temple service. At daybreak, they brought a lamb to the outer court. When one priest prepared to slaughter the lamb, another entered the temple to clear the ashes from the altar of incense and relight the lamps inside the holy place. The opening of the great entrance door into the temple was the signal to slay the lamb. Priests then brought the body parts of the lamb to the altar of burnt offering and poured out its blood at the base of the altar. The appointed priest then took the golden censer. The priest filled it with coals from the hottest part of the fire on the altar of burnt offering. He then entered the open door of the temple and arranged the coals of fire on the altar of incense. At the time commanded by the officer of the day, he added incense to the fire on the altar. At this decisive point in the service, three things happened. Someone threw a shovel down between the altar of burnt offering and the entrance to the temple. A break in the singing of the temple choir produced a moment of silence, and during that moment of silence, seven priests would blow seven trumpets.
Okay, can I ask a question? This is John Pauline, and he's developed this from archaeological research.
He's even Adventist.
From Jewish writings, I imagine.
And this is the procedures of the temple.
Yeah.
Those procedures predated Revelation.
Yes. And if you look at what I...
And everybody who listened to Revelation knew that.
Had experienced these.
Right.
At least the Jews who heard it.
Okay.
And you'll notice the references to earlier passages in Revelation where there are allusions.
So this play is not about a fictitious occurrences that people were not familiar with. They're very familiar with this.
Referencing this ritual here.
Yeah.
So why did he throw down a shovel?
I don't know. The reason wasn't given, but it's throwing down the shovel. It's
part of the ritual.
Yeah.
Okay.
We salute. It's a ritual, but in our mind, we know what it means.
Okay. So that does that. What we've seen described here in the first part of chapter 8 does sound similar to this ritual.
Yeah. So ever since the very beginning of Revelation, what John has been describing is the temple service, in one way or another.
Basically, taking the temple service and applying it to the Christian experience.
Yeah, you could say that. The trumpets were used for celebrations, to call sacred or military assemblies, and as alerts, often warning of impending invasions. As far as the seven angels, this again it reflects on Jewish tradition. Now, there's nothing biblical about it. It's just, it's just tradition.
Seven trumpets is seven candlesticks.
You know, between the Old Testament and the New Testament, Judaism had settled on seven archangels for whatever reason, adding five to the two important angels named in Daniel. In Daniel, the two archangels that are named are Michael and Gabriel. And so those seven are probably in view here. So there is silence for about half an hour, just as the seventh seal is opened. Now, I think one of the things... we should not get hung up on the preciseness of the half hour.
Well, you were saying last week or last time that in Jewish culture there really wasn't a measurement less than an hour. Mm-hmm. So a half an hour would be a measurement of half an hour. I mean, it's
about half an hour is what John writes, which simply means a very short time.
Now, in Jewish sanctuary, that about a half an hour after the shovel was dropped was reality. I mean, they really, there was silence in the sanctuary, the earthly sanctuary at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there was silence when this. Yeah, as the.
I don't know that it actually lasted half an hour.
Right, as the incense is added to the fire at the altar of incense. There's
so
silence.
Singing silence while the fire is added.
Okay. I'm kind of seeing people now in the sanctuary or in this area, kind of like in a, like an awestruck look, like gasp.
Yeah. And so far in Revelation, there has been worship in this heavenly temple that has been going throughout eternity, as it has been pictured. But now there is a break. There is silence in that eternal worship for the very first time. And at that time, and at that precise moment, trumpets are given. And the use of sacred trumpets refers back to Numbers chapter 10, verses 1 through 10, and particularly verses 9 and 10. Which is what Revelation, what John probably has in mind. And those two verses read, "And when you go to war in your land against the adversary who oppresses you, then you shall sound an alarm with the trumpets, that you may be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. On the day of your gladness also, and at your appointed feast, and at the beginnings of your months, you shall blow the trumpets over your burnt offerings and over the sacrifices of your peace offerings. They shall be a reminder of you before your God. I am the Lord, your God." So, it's a call. It appears to be a call to battle. When you go to war in your land against the adversary who oppresses you. Because remember, for the last seven chapters, it's all about been all about the oppression that followers of Jesus are experiencing. And what is God going to do about it?
Call you to war. Call you to battle. Time to take up your arms
and the trumpets are a signal that are both a call to God to remember, to God to act, and for God to remember. It signifies salvation and deliverance for God's people, joy and peace that they would experience. On the other hand, these same trumpets mean judgment against those who oppress them. So it would be indicating the fear that those that was portrayed in the sixth seal.
That's the case of the trumpets in Jericho.
And there's a possible allusion to Israelites' battle for Jericho.
Sorry.
Joshua chapter 6.
Oops.
You got it.
If you, when you recall that story, what?
Every day they flew.
Silence during the marching.
But they were supposed to be totally silent.
They were. There was no talking. No. Except the only sound that they made during the marching. The trumpets were being blown as they marched through all 7 days. And at the very end, at the seventh day of marching, after they went around it, on the seventh day, they marched around seven times. And when they stopped, the trumpets blew and the people shouted, and destruction came upon Jericho.
And it was known far and wide.
So, with these trumpets, those are probably some of the Old Testament allusions that are in mind. In regards to the incense, in chapter 5, verse 8, it was written, the 24 elders, each holding golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. So the incense clearly is identified as prayers of the saints. And also in the fifth seal, in chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, it was written, I saw under the altar of incense, the souls of those who had been slain for the word of God and for the witness they had borne. They cried out with a loud voice, O sovereign Lord, holy and true, how long before you will judge and avenge our blood on those who dwell on the earth? So this is the prayer that is represented as the incense. So they're not just general prayers to God. They're not just general prayers of provide me with your daily bread, protect me, etc., etc. It's prayers of how long before you will judge and vindicate, make right all the wrongs that have been happening. It's prayers for God, specific prayers for God to bring justice against the world's injustices. And in response, fire is flung down to the earth. So clearly God is responding to the prayers of his saints. And there's an echo back to the sixth seal. This is chapter 6, verses 12 and 14, where it reads, when he opened the sixth seal, I looked, and behold, there was a great earthquake, and the sun became black as sackcloth, the full moon became like blood, and the stars of the sky fell to the earth as the fig tree sheds its winter fruit when shaken by a gale. The sky vanished like a scroll that is being rolled up, and every mountain and island was removed from its place. Mentioned a number of times already that how one perceives and experiences so-called judgment depends on which side you're on. And each person gets to choose. God isn't forcing someone to be on his side or against him. Every person is given a choice. So, I think it's important to not see this fire being thrown down as punishment, but rather it represents simply the consequences of the choices that have been made. With that, the trumpets are about to be sounded. And this sets up the body of the next act. So these first six verses of chapter 8 is a transition passage. You know, it closes the scene of the seven seals and opens and leads into the seven trumpets.
The seven trumpets which are a close-up of the seventh seal.
In a way. The focus of the seven seals had been heaven, the throne room and the temple. The focus of seven trumpets is going to be on the earth. We know, if we recall back the seven letters, the focus was of the earth. And so we go from the earth to heaven and now back to earth. The audience saw what was happening with the churches on earth in the seven letters, then they were shown how heaven was responding to the events on earth. Now the audience expects to see how that response affects the earth and those in it. The audience, because of chapter 7, already knows God's servants have been promised God's judgment will not harm them. So what is going to happen with the seven trumpets is probably not about the saints, but about those who have rejected God.
All right. I'm still trying to figure out why this isn't. The sixth seal, we're talking about the moon to blood and all that. The sun to sackcloth. How did that tie into it?
Verse 5 of chapter 8. Then the angel took the censer and filled it with fire from the altar and threw it on the earth. And there were peals of thunder, rumblings, flashes of lightning, and an earthquake.
Yeah, that was the seventh seal. Back in the sixth seal, we had the sackcloth and the blood and the...
They're both cataclysms.
But why are we talking about the earth in the sixth seal?
The earth...
Yeah.
The sixth seal is about the earth. It's what's happening on earth when the sixth seal is opened in heaven.
And the seventh seal...
As in the seals are this whole, we have the letters which show what's going on earth, and then we have the play about what's going on in heaven, and there are some references to earth, to what happens to earth at that time. But then it isn't till the trumpets that you actually go back down to earth and see.
Is the sixth seal showing what's happening on earth as in response to what man is doing, and the seventh is what's happening on earth because of God's response to that?
Maybe
I need to go back and start reading it from the beginning.
I see them as the same thing.
No. So you're not putting, you're taking the time out of it.
Yeah, you have to let go of the time thing. The seals are not necessarily sequential. The first four seals with the horsemen could be argued that to be sequential, but 5, 6, and 7 may or may not be.
Well, your summary at the bottom, Revelation is a story that builds suspense and anticipation by carefully arranging its material implications. Interpretations of the piece must take entire book into account. I'm sorry, I should have read 8. John wants his audience to transfer the Hebrew temple rituals to Jesus. So basically, this, even though it says John, in my mind, I think of Paul, because they are saturated with Hebrew temple and Hebrew history and Hebrew ceremonial history. And John is trying to imprint that with the Christian...
Well, one of John or Jesus' purposes for Revelation is to transfer, to show that the concept of Israel has never been racial or ethnic or national, but rather has always been a spiritual calling out
it's always been God's people.
And, that's,
and at the beginning, he created a racial group to fill that category. But it's not limited to that.
And the book's name is The Revelation of Jesus Christ. And he is using the Hebrew sanctuary history as the framework for that revelation of Jesus Christ.
Well, because for the Jews, though they thought of themselves as God's chosen people, all of their history pointed to that. And John is now, through Revelation, reapplying all of those things to the church.
That works. Now, a Jewish Christian could understand Revelation.
Yeah, yeah.
What did the Jewish Hebrew think of it?
Jewish
was
Hebrew?
the
non-Christian Jews.
Non-Christian Jews?
Did they think it was blasphemy?
No, the
Jerusalem Jew.
Jews who had
rejected Christianity.
Yeah, who they would
have. Probably the drama would be familiar because it was a familiar format. You pointed out at the beginning that this format was familiar to them. They had plays like this. And so the concepts would be familiar, that there would be concepts in here that would be...
Well, I think some would have taken offense. Others would have just dismissed it as yet another Jewish sect trying to justify their existence. Because, we only... In our tradition, we think there were Jews and then there were Christians. But in reality, there were many, many branches of Judaism, of which Christianity was one.
As if we have similarity on Christianity today. Okay. So, but your summary note A really does make sense. Because as we have all grown through school, we have learned Jewish history through the Old Testament. And through that, it does make sense when you read Revelation. Yeah, that does work.
Well, and the idea of Revelation being a story, a drama in format that they knew, kind of like, say, the Chronicles of Narnia is a drama in a format that we understand.
Maybe you do.
Teaches lessons. Yeah. And maybe if someone from a different culture or time period came and reread Chronicles of Narnia, they might try to pick it apart and say, well, this means that, and that means that, and because he says this here, then obviously that's going to happen. And maybe that isn't what it's trying to
be. Were you the
parts
one
that are just a story.
Were you the one that was saying that a lot of the children's...
And there are lessons in it.
Some were saying that the children's stories, like the Big Bad Wolf blowing the house out, had, what's it, were you talking about the history of that?
Religious connotations or something more like it?
No. Why did they, what is the story of the Big Bad Wolf?
Story of Big Bad Wolf?
There were three pigs in three houses, and one had a house of straw, one had a house of wood
and brick or stone.
Right. What is the history of that? What is the purpose of that story?
It's, these fables, they have, and fairy tales, they have a very varied history. We go to, they generally come from Europe, but similar stories can be found in other cultures. And depending on which, there's some variations. So it's hard to tell what was the original.
Somewhere I read or someone was talking about the history of, and I thought that was one of them, but for instance, where does the song, ashes to ashes, or ring around the rosy.
That came from the Black Plague.
Right.
And a lot of these stories may have referenced current events. Some of them, no doubt, were just cautionary tales to try and teach children to be good.
The big bad wolf, because the wolf was looked at such like a dangerous animal.
And that one might be a cautionary tale teaching children to do your work well and don't take shortcuts. And
well, wherever I read this, I thought it was a big bad wolf, but maybe it wasn't. But the in situ interpretation in this day was totally different than what in our today we read these fairy tales and we laugh and chuckle what they really are today. Didn't have any relationship to its origins.
Like the ring around the rosy, probably a lot of the other things that we...
Quite know. A few of the fairy tales and fables have been sanitized for our consumption.
So, how did that
Disney
get...
Disney Fight is even worse than sanitized.
Oh, yeah, Disney Fight.
Because Disney Fight has to have a happy ending.
To the big bad wolf, and I don't really know that story, but for instance, Ring Around the Rosy, that sort of stuff, you really got to know the history in order to make sense.
Yeah.
And in order to understand Revelation, you really got to know the history.
Yeah. Without understanding how, all the Old Testament allusions that are found in Revelation, Revelation can easily be misinterpreted.
Oh, it's just right.
Interpreted by the people who first heard it. What did it mean to them at that time?
And I don't want to discredit. I mean, if another individual wants to read it and use it for end time events and put together their chart, that's okay. I'm not going to discredit that.
And it can have connotations to end time events.
But my intent right now was to understand what did the person in its day understand it to say.
Yeah,
because all of the entirety of Revelation was applicable to its original audience.
Right, and I want to hear that. Not that that discredits the other, and I'm not going to go there, but I want to know what the original audience heard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, cool.
Were you saying something about Shakespeare?
No.
What did his audience, what was his purpose of his plays? What have I been reading?
I think entertainment.
It was entertainment, certainly, but
there
no,
was
like.
What about that? Discuss the power in England at its time.
Politics?
Yeah.
Yeah, see? So if you want to understand Shakespeare, you probably have to understand European politics.
Yeah. And European politics at that time was very intertwined with the church. The state church, whatever it was, the Church of England.
But you were saying in that era they were somewhat different. They were breaking entertainment away from religion because in old times, politics and religion and entertainment were all the same.
Yeah, well, for the Greeks, entertainment was about describing what was happening with the gods.
Yeah.
Revelation is a little bit of that. It's describing what God is doing. So instead of God, it's God.
Well, one thing that I can read Revelation and recognizing that the audience of its day heard Revelation is not scary to me. But when people try to graphically portray the beast, it gives a whole different connotation to graphics. And the verbal doesn't bother me, but the graphics do. And the original audience didn't see the graphics.
True. They didn't have...
So is the graphics... I don't know where to go with that. But
are they necessary to the interpretation?
To me, it clouds it.